This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Emmett Till was 14 years old when he was abducted, tortured, and lynched in 1955 by two white men in Mississippi. Both were acquitted by an all-white jury.
Till's murder helped to spark the civil rights movement and national protest organizations developed in its aftermath. Till's murder is one of many instances of white supremacist violence that flared after the 1954 Supreme Court decision that declared school segregation unconstitutional.
And white supremacist ideals and sometimes violence are still an active force in American culture.
Timothy B. Tyson is a senior research scholar at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University. His latest book is called The Blood of Emmett Till. Timothy will be speaking at the Wisconsin Book Festival on Thursday, September 28th at 5 p.m. at the Wisconsin Historical Society Auditorium. Tim, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Veronica. Good. It's going to be good to be back in Central Time. I love Madison, Wisconsin, and honored to be with you on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, it's nice to have you here. And I want to ask you the subject of your new book, Emmett Till. This is a murder, a lynching from 1955. Why is it still such a searing memory today?
Well, I think Emmett Till's never really let us go. It's really the most notorious racial incident in the history of the world. In some ways, it happened just as TV had gone, nationally, international, and was when people commonly had it, and it was the first sort of TV media circuit. It really depended on it. A lot of this is because of Black Chicago, because Chicago was, African Americans had been coming to Chicago since the turn of the century. And had built the Chicago Defender, the largest circulation black newspaper in the country, and the Johnson Publishing Company with Ebony and Jet, and the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, and other black labor unions, and a large NAACP. Chicago is one of the is where much of the Great Migration landed. So, and especially folks from Mississippi. And so Emmett Till, had he been from Mississippi, or even from some lesser place, we might not know it, but what his mother did, and he was really brutally murdered, and his corpse was a ghastly sight, and she had an open casket funeral at which a couple hundred thousand Chicagoans came by to view the body, and that the photographs of that were published nationally. And then Black Chicago, which had the most powerful political machine in the country, had national connections, and the protest movement they built out of Chicago really created the infrastructure for a national civil rights movement. So, that's one of the reasons why.
No,
the Till sticks with us. So it also, you'll hear if you go to Black Lives Matter rally, you're very, very likely to hear people chanting Emmett Till's name. Mm. Michael Brown, Emmett Till, how many black kids will you kill? As the chant goes. And there are others.
I want to go back into Emmett Till's story and bring us up to present time in a bit, but you sat down with the white woman who'd accused Till of some kind of misconduct. It's unclear at the beginning of your book what this was, maybe a flirting with her, maybe more. She was in her 80s when you spoke to her. Why did she want to talk to you, and what did she say?
I think she... I knew that she had... never been interviewed since 1955, when she was 21. She had never said a public word about this. And I knew that journalists and historians had been trying to talk to her all that time. And she'd never given anyone an interview and sort of hid. And so, she called me up. Actually, her daughter-in-law called me up and said that her mother-in-law was coming to town and next week, and they'd like to have a cup of coffee with me. And I sort of pretended she hadn't said it, because she said, well, you might, she heard that in my voice and said, well, you might know about my mother-in-law. Her name was Carolyn Bryant. And of course, I knew all of that about her. And so I was happy to talk to her. I felt like I should, and I wasn't writing a book about her, but I got caught up in it because it's a story that won't let us loose and wouldn't let me loose.
And one of the things she told you was that one of the cornerstones of her testimony wasn't true.
Yeah, that was. I know that sounds like big news. Nobody believed her testimony anyway, so it never really struck me as such a. I mean, it wasn't like I was shocked. I knew she was lying. It's but that's a that was what people seized upon with respect to the book. And to me, she wasn't really. To me, it wasn't anything like the most important thing that I learned in the course of researching and writing this book.
I want to look a little bit at the present and how that has been informed by the past. Now, if you think of Dylann Roof shooting 9 parishioners at a black church, if you think of an African-American man named James Byrd Jr. dragged behind a pickup truck to his death in Texas, do you see this violence as the continuing story of Emmett Till's death, of white supremacist violence?
Well, absolutely. White supremacy is the notion that God has created us in a hierarchy of moral, cultural, intellectual worth on the basis of pigmentation, with light-skinned people at the top and black, dark-skinned people at the bottom. It's a foundational notion for our country and much of the world, which is all it is. It's a lasting legacy of the Atlantic slave trade, but a rationale for it. But there's the violence, which is it's an ongoing thing. American history is a river of unpunished blood, but with respect to African Americans. But I think the striking thing is that, it's not so much the racial brutality, the ongoing violent injustice, which we have had with us a long time, but what people did with it, it seems to me, is what matters. So I think of it as being the thing that is most important to me about the Emmett Till story is what African Americans and other Americans who were committed to racial equality and justice did with that horrific story. They trumpeted it across the world. They marshaled all leveraged all the political strength of Black Chicago, and then organized a protest movement that went on for more than a year, coast to coast, and the labor unions and the NAACP and the churches and other progressive organizations that did that. That's how we had a national civil rights movement. This was a kind of convening of a national civil rights movement for the first time. At that point, the civil rights movement, what we think of as the civil rights movement, was really a bunch of local movements across the South and loosely connected to each other to some degree. But the thing that we think of when we, the thing that won the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and that brought at least, nominally and full formal and legal equality before the law for African Americans, that movement really began with the lynching of Emmett Till.
And you mentioned, Rosa...
fiction story, it's a resurrection story in many ways.
You wrote about how Rosa Parks had been thinking of Emmett Till when she was at the bus on that day, thinking about not getting up. And I wonder if you could put that into words. What was it about Emmett Till's murder that sparked not just outrage, not just sorrow, but this concentrated, coordinated effort that spanned years and a nation and many, many organizations?
Yeah, well, the Mississippi... what I call the Mississippi Underground, the network of African-American activists in Mississippi who were involved in the Emmett Till trial, who found all the witnesses for the prosecution. Those people fan, and people like Medgar Evers and Dr. T.R.M. Howard and Amzie Moore, they went around the country speaking, and Dr. Howard spoke at Dexter Baptist Church in Montgomery, invited there by an unknown fellow named Martin Luther King, and Rosa Parks was in the congregation, and he told that, you know, it was a very intimate story for him. He was, and he told that story, and then he and Rosa Parks and perhaps others sat up half the night talking about movement politics, and 4 days later, she was asked to move to the back of a bus, and said later that I thought about Emmett Till and I couldn't move. So that was, you know, and that helped. And also what's less well known is that the money that there was money, a lot of civil rights money was raised in these coast-to-coast protests against the lynching of Emmett Till. And they, one of the first things they did was to buy a fleet of station wagons for the Montgomery bus boycott. Some of the early money that supported the Montgomery bus boycott came out of this case.
The echoes of Emmett Till run deep still today. Well, Timothy, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad to talk with you and look forward to being back in Madison on Thursday.
It's Timothy B. Tyson, Senior Research Scholar at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University. His latest book is called The Blood of Emmett Till, and he'll be speaking at the Wisconsin Book Festival on Thursday, September 28th at 5 p.m. at the Wisconsin Historical Society Auditorium.
Coming up, we'll find out why Republicans in the Senate decided to drop their most recent effort to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare.